Right, should we get going?
Yep.
All right, so my name's Rod Bray. I am a senior program manager inside of Microsoft IT. Ram and I were asked to come give a kind of an overview of what we've done and the maturity level in Microsoft IT. I'll let Ram introduce himself.
Hey, thank you, first of all. I know this is probably the longest day for you guys. And my name is Ram Ratnam. I am part of corporate functions IT within Microsoft. Me and my team, in fact, Brad Wild, he's here, is part of my team. We are responsible for IT capabilities that are in support of planning process and delivery process. So what does it consist of? Anything all the way from strategy formulation to configured solution that is ready for deployment, either it is in the cloud, in our Azure infrastructure, or in our data center. That's what we do. So we provide systems that is used by 4,000 employees within Microsoft IT and about 8,000 or 9,000 vendors that we have. Me personally been involved in project since Project Server got introduced. If you guys are following closely Microsoft, Chris Kaposla was the PM at the time. So I've been involved in, so my experience not only in having EPM deployed within Microsoft, especially within the consulting practices, but also a few of your enterprise customers as well. So with that, what we're going to do is that we're going to talk a little bit from a customer point of view. So even though we are Microsoft, we are very much like one of you. We have the same, if not more complex environment as you guys are, constrained by the budget, constrained by people, constrained by process methodology or lack thereof. So we thought, like, oh, hey, it'll be interesting to talk about a product in the lights of what we want to try to accomplish. So it's going to be more of a conversation wherein we are going to share our journey in advancing project management. What is our perspective of project management is, how do we try to move the envelope and what kind of a things that we are using from a model perspective. We will talk through the model, the four perspective of the model, the people perspective, process perspective, information perspective, and a technology perspective. And at the end of the day, this is a project conference, so we wanted to go a little more deeper with our, what kind of a romancing are we doing with project as a product offering from Microsoft? What has been our experience, first-hand experience, with project online? In fact, there was a gentleman who came in and asked the expert, and he said, like, no, hey, I'm trying to decide, should we be going from 2010 to 2013? What are the advantages of 2013? And I'm scratching my head, like, let me think, because it's been almost 18 months since we have been using project online. I don't even think about project server anymore, so let me recollect the pieces. And Rod and myself were trying to brainstorm, so like, oh yeah, security model. Yeah, that's something different in 2010 versus 2013. Do you know about OneNote? That's different. Like when we were trying to really scramble, didn't think about what are the on-premise functionalities because we pretty much tried to live in like, you know, kind of a online. Having said that, Project Server is not the only tool. So we will talk about what this ecosystem looks like. So from an outline perspective, we will start with a definition. What does we mean by maturity? What are the focus areas that we have? And we want to go into the pillars, namely the people, process, technology, and information. We'll give you a little bit our view of how we mature that capability. Then I want to talk a little more in details on the IT ecosystem and what kind of an architectural decisions that we need to deal with. As I mentioned, I was an implementer. I ground myself on a lot of enterprise architectural issues. So I'm going to present various architectural issues that we have debated with the product groups, debated with our support organizations, how it influenced our design decisions and our maturity over a period of time. And then we'll talk about some of the technology solutions that we have currently within Microsoft. And we will go in a little bit deeper into the service model because it's one area where Brad is leading a special project in trying to define how should we think and consume the services, because project management is being offered as a service, from Microsoft. So how should we consume as an end user or an IT organization? So that's another part. Throughout this thing, we have decided to add some question and answer. And we are going to dialogue each other. If you think of me as a technology provider for Microsoft IT, Rod is, on the other hand, he's a more of a consumer of the technology that I provide. He runs a PMO office. He, in his past life, had to deal with Project Server and PMO office itself. But now he has the luxury of not dealing with the technology, but dealing with only the business side and the PMO side of it. So I'm going to be asking some questions. I wanted to also learn from you guys, so it's going to be some of the questions. If you feel that, like, oh, yeah, I dealt with this situation, this is how it is, we would really appreciate it, because we don't have a silver bullet. There are some technology solutions that we ourselves are scrambling to see, like, you know, why is it this way? Why is product group have decided to implement in this particular way? Shouldn't they have approached it in a different manner, and so on and so forth? So there is no right or wrong answer. So we really wanted to make it as much as possible a learning opportunity for us mutually. Does it sound good? All right. So I want to start with a little bit about Microsoft IT vision, and most importantly, the belief that we have about project management. Our goal is fairly simple. We believe that from a maturity standpoint, we are not where we need to be as a world-class IT organization. Specifically, when you think about $1.6 billion of IT spend annually, we don't think we manage the dollars effectively. But of course, the market is demanding more from us. So the budget has been cut constantly, like, you know, 5% year over year. Or the other way of saying is, like, oh, yeah, you still get 1.6 million, but now you need to deal with the Skype, you need to deal with Nokia, and so on and so forth. That's another way of cutting our budget, right? So we really wanted to bring in a formalized best practices on project management within IT. That's our goal. Why do we want to do this? Because we wanted to have a successful project. We see time and time again, there is a lot of variability in the project that we do. I mentioned that there's about 4,000 employees, full-time employees, who work at Microsoft IT, and there are about 8,000 or 9,000 vendors, depending on the time of the year, depending on the year that it is critical. If it's a launch year, we are likely to have about 9,000 to 10,000 vendors. If it is a non-launch year, it'll be probably 8,000 to 9,000 vendors. So almost 12,000, 13,000 people working on it, and a lot of people touch and deliver projects within IT. So we wanted to really reduce the variability. So our belief is that if only we focus on accountability aspect of it, which starts with who really owns this project, who are they accountable to, and what are they accountable for? If those things are established, it will make ourselves a lot more accountable to the dollars that we receive from the business. The second aspect of it is well-defined plans. It is very common across our organization as well, say, like, no, yep, we have some performance issue on this particular server. Can you go and get the performance issue addressed? Before we realize that that becomes a small project, you have a, maybe $100,000 or $200,000 associated to it, and you got to go and address them. Oh, we are going to do a launch of Surface Pro 2, and there is going to be a marketing campaign associated with it, and it is going to be targeted at our emerging markets. Can you do something? Like, you know, all of a sudden, like, a new marketing project gets initiated and they want to have some system changes done. How do you handle them? So that requires to have a well-defined plans for those projects that has the very basics. Schedules, resources, and dependencies. Those, we believe, is that critical in our ability to advance. Keep in mind that these vendor resources come and go, so we all need to speak the same language. We all need to follow the same methodology. That's the challenge that we have. It's no different than most of the organizations that you guys represent. The final thing is that Microsoft is probably a very unique environment where communication is very critical. I myself came, like, now, when I came to Microsoft and, like, when I came to US, one thing that is very unique and interesting about the US culture is that everybody needs information. Whether you take your kid to a baseball or you're trying to play the Super Bowl game, everything is numbers. Everybody is really wanting to know the numbers. That's no different in your project as well. They want to know how much risk you have. They want to know whether you are behind schedule or not. They wanted to know like what kind of a variability do you have with your budgets and so on and so forth. That requires a lot more rigorous communication and collaboration because there is so much stuff is going on, it's not always possible to stay abreast of what's going on. So you needed to have more flexible communication. That means that like there has to be some repository, there has to be some kind of a dashboard that you can always refer to in remembering like where you are, what you are doing and what you are after. So those are the beliefs that we have. That's the kind of a stuff. So probably many of you can associate saying, yep, I can put myself in my organization. These are the things. Does it sound about right for most of you guys? All right. So what do you think of the enablers? So if you think about project management as a discipline, project management as a capability, IT capability, or project management as a service that is rendered by Microsoft IT organization, it consists of people, process, information, and technology. But the way that comes in, we wanted to start with the industry best practices, as I mentioned. And it is, starts from PMI. So as all of you probably know, it has got the knowledge areas and the process groups. So we wanted to ground on those. But internally at Microsoft, we have what is called ITLC, which stands for IT lifecycle. How does the project get delivered within Microsoft? So we have a couple of methodologies. If you are doing a software-related project, you could either follow CMMI waterfall methods, or you can follow Agile or Scrum methodologies. Or if you're doing an infrastructure project, so there are again some methodologies on how you execute this infrastructure project. So what we wanted to do is that make sure the best practices from a project management are part and parcel of our IT lifecycle management. So that's where the foundation is. But once that foundation is there, then that gets rendered through the lens of a people, process, technology, and information. So where do we start defining the capabilities that Microsoft IT requires? So there are about 10 areas, knowledge areas, in the PMBOK, the fifth edition of it, the new one including the stakeholder management. When we looked at how does it translate to what we need within Microsoft, and more specifically within Microsoft IT, we mapped them into almost 9 of them. The cost and procurement got mixed into one for cost called accounting. Why? Because the corporate procurement does pretty much a lot of the foundational procurement process for us. So the individual business units, they cannot do a variation of it. It's pretty much the standard. However, how the project accounting happens could be very different from IT to a specific product group or a GFS or a Bing group or any one of them. So we anchored on 9 capabilities: stakeholder management, plan management, communication, scoping, change management, and so on and so forth. And then we have some details underneath as well that further refines what those capabilities mean for IT and IT as an organization. That's the first step. So I wanted to pose a question. Sorry, go ahead. You had a question. Yep. There were some refinement that we did. So about two and a half years back, we did a capability model. And then we did a refinement about 16 months ago or 14 months ago. At the time, what we did is that we not only looked at PMBOK, but we also looked at, there is an Innovation Value Institute that describes, how an IT organization should organize. So when we looked at that capability model, we said, hey, there are some redundancies that we can remove and so on. But we at Microsoft, we were like, okay, hang on to the 3-letter acronyms and numbers. So we decided that the 11.2.1, why is it 11.2.1? Because it's an enterprise level capability model exists, and that's the reason why you don't see the 11.2.8. At one point in time we had it, but that got morphed, and now we don't have it. Yeah, that, so again, the capability models is managed in our enterprise architecture management tool, which is where all these capabilities are defined and the processes are defined and so on. So given that Rod represents my customer base, I'm going to pose some of questions. and we'll have a little bit of a dialogue. So, Rod, maybe you should give a little bit of background about the ICS, Rod.
Sure.
So that the kids are contextual, like, you know, how did you approach, like, you know, project management within IT? Because I myself came to IT only 2 years ago, whereas Rod has been in IT for 22 years.
Yeah.
22 years. So he has a long history of how project management matured within Microsoft IT.
And it really hasn't been until recently that we've done a lot of the real big heavy lifting work. But just to give you a little context, I was managing a team of people who did contracts for a living. We were the network provider for Microsoft, so you can think of us as the plumber. So we had a small little team, and I was happy doing that, and my GM at the time came to me and said, Rod, I want you to go create and run a PMO for me. And of course, that's one of those questions where you can't really say no. So I jumped right in with both feet, started doing some analyzing of what was out there, saw that all of our projects were distributed across all kinds of places. They were on people's hard drives. They were in SharePoint lists. They were in Excel files. They were all across. There was no easy way to come bring all this data in that we wanted to look at. So I went back to my boss and said, what do you think about Project Server? He said, sounds good. Go do it. So I went out and worked with some of the guys in the product group, got on the TAP program. I think some people know the Technology Adaption Program, and we were able to turn up an instance of Project Server 2010, and we just lit that on fire. We got a bunch of reporting together. We started showing the capabilities. One of the biggest advantages I have was this GM at the time was a great sponsor. He had, you know, mandated that people use the tool, but because of that, we saw tons of value and were able to drive that throughout the IT organization. In fact, because of that, Rom saw what we had done and asked me to kind of help provide for the next version of the online stuff. So we took a lot of the work that we had done in that instance and moved it up into IT as a whole.
So, Rod, can you just talk a little bit about the value drivers? Like, given that we started using a Project Server instance, I think we had maybe even 2007, maybe, but the most significant one was 2010.
2010, yeah.
What was the value drivers that Dave Gass, which was your GM at the time, why? What was the reason why you wanted to have a Project Server or even Project Infrastructure?
Well, we wanted a way to aggregate all the data, be able to see things like variance information and how many risks and issues we had, and be able to take all that data and pull it into a meeting that we would hold every week. So we had a governance meeting where we would onboard new work. But in that meeting, we could, at the click of a button, be able to see where resources were, which projects were the most important. We were using the portfolio piece of it. It was just very powerful, and was the main driver behind that. I can tell you a story. So I was trying to sell this to some of the directs to the GM, and one of them we were kind of going back and forth, and I said, "Well, let me ask you a question." I said, if I wanted to know all the risks on all of your projects, how long would that take you to get? And this is like a Tuesday. And he said, I could probably have that to you by the end of the week. And I said, well, what if I could have that to you in 30 seconds? Is that powerful enough for you? And immediately he was on board with what we were trying to do. So, yeah.
So question for you guys. As you were establishing, I think you were mentioning earlier that like you now have the responsibility for establishing a PMO practice within your company. What has been your management expectation of the value that project management itself provides? Any interesting thoughts, interesting things that normal conventional wisdom would not have thought of? Yeah, sure. I agree.
Actually, I work with cloud, so we didn't plan this. But also, common ways of storing data so that it's easier to access in common practice.
Common language, common practice, common repository?
I think management not knowing what's going on and seeing failure rates that are excessive makes them wonder about maybe there's a better way. That was the stimulus in our case.
So is it transparency and project intelligence, if you will? Lack thereof of transparency. Lack of.
So I know Ram touched on, we have the ITLC life cycles that we've developed for all the different projects. One of the interesting things that we did right away was we created workflows that map to these different project types. So in this ITLC process, there's different stages and gates, and we were able to very quickly and easily model that with all the right fields and stuff so people could use that.
Right. We will go into those things as well. So once we decided that, like, now we are going to look at PMI and the knowledge areas and process groups as our foundation, the next natural question is that, like, now, wow, PMI is fairly vast. Where do we begin? There was this, almost every year, our quality assurance team does some kind of a quality assurance test. Essentially, like, they go and sniff around the thousands of projects that we execute to see what degree do those projects are following the standards that has been established and where the biggest variance and misses are. If you recollect, one of our goals is, our belief is that, like, as long as we can minimize the variability and the misses that we have in our project across our ecosystem, we should be able to move the needle along the way in the right direction. And these are the variability. It is really shocking to the management to see that even the basics, like a project charter, it's not done consistently. Either you had a template that is very different from project to project, or you had a project that was well in execution, that has already had one or two executive reviews, but you're going to ask them, where is your project charter? And they can't produce one. That was an interesting case. There were no requirement sign-off. Those are the interesting areas of variability. So then we said, like, how do we measure? Because some teams, especially these are all top CIO programs, when you say that, like, they don't have a charter document, and like, it makes you really, like, wonder, like, what happened? Is it because you managed to get it due to the fact that you're working on a very hot area, whether it is a Nokia integration, whether it is, like, Windows Phone next generation? Is it the reason why you are able to bypass some of the processes? So we really required a maturity framework in which we can consistently assess every project. So we looked at, and we are very familiar with the CMMI model. That was one of the foundation, but that wasn't sufficient enough for us. So we went and looked to see what are other appropriate capability maturity model, because it's not just about tool maturity or a people maturity. We wanted to look at all the dimensions of the maturity. And there is an organization called Innovation Value Institute, IVI. It's based out of UK. And they do a pretty good job of describing for each of your capability what defines being at the advanced level or being at the dynamic level. So we use that formula. Again, they have the same model, initial all the way through optimizing. Those two became our basis for describing our capability maturity. This is our target map. I think, Brad, what, this is about 2 months old or something of the nature, like this target map, or maybe even like a two. 3 weeks old. So every year, now we have a practice of updating this data. So we have a PMO office or a discipline leader, Bill Dow. What he does is that he goes to various business units and key stakeholders, and he does a survey at a detailed capability level to saying, like, are we meeting the expectations and the business value the customer is looking for from a project management discipline, from a project management capability standpoint? And then we define what should be the level that we need to be on. And this is a defined target state. And we also describe a little more definition around what does this mean. For example, if you look at a project plan management, our expectation is that we should be in advanced level. So we are currently in the intermediate level, we need to get to an advanced level. And that would mean that project managers are able to control their schedule, they provide a consistent update, and it is all present in a single repository, which is our project online. That's the kind of an expectation. So that, once again, minimizes the variability, eliminates the misses that the individual projects would have within the organization. So this became the basis on which we can build our efforts around. So it's not a technology effort. It is like, you know, understanding the business and trying to move them in the right direction. So the first part of the capability, as I mentioned, starts with process. It starts with what is the process that we want to. Fortunately, project management as a discipline has been in existence for more than 30 years. There is a lot of good work has happened in the industry. There is no reason for us to reinvent the wheel. So we took the PMI process groups and knowledge areas and integrated into what we have internally as our SDLC or ITLC processes. Rod talked about the phase gates. So our implementation now reflects those activities, saying, like, no, did you complete these particular tasks or not, these milestones or not? That's one way. That was the biggest and significant process work. We constantly revise this work as well. For instance, like agile methodology, we recently adapted agile methodology and we went through a lot of revisions. So when we do that, we reflect it in our ITLC as well, so that there is no misinterpretation of what agile means within IT. So there is an expectation that is set, and to the earlier point, so that everybody speaks the same language. The second area is the people part. When we talk about advancing a project management at an organization level, we don't believe that it is just one role responsibility. It's not that you're going to go and hire a project manager who's very seasoned, who's got a PMP certification, and who understands how risks should be managed, who understands how schedule is. Because we believe that it has to be in the DNA of the organization. So which means in a spectrum of users, you are going to have people who are team members all the way into your CIO and your business VIPs. They need to understand and being able to ask for the right set of data set. That requires a very good engagement with our community so that we can really push them to understand what is that we are after. So there is a lot of effort goes in the form of brown bags, and we bring in some external vendors to give us some training sessions on project management, and we encourage our people to get PMP certification and maintain them in the PDUs and so on and so forth. And also, we try to get all our MBRs, the monthly business reviews and quarterly business reviews, we try to use a consistent dashboards so that the leaders know what exactly they're looking for when they do a project review or a portfolio review. That's another one. That's a lot of hand-holding, and this is where the change management and readiness aspect comes in. We believe we are really underinvested in this area. I think if my memory serves, we have about 2.5% full-time focused on this effort, and the budget is really shoestring budget. So we have sometimes vendor dollars, and we go and run this on training sessions and other stuff. But otherwise, it's still one of the painful area for us. Because keep in mind that they need to teach not only the methodology, but also they need to teach how the tool lights up the methodology as well. And the tool is constantly evolving, and it makes it really challenging for this 2-person team to educate this 14,000 people. That's not a very easy task. So Rod mentioned that in ICS, which is the Infrastructure Communication Services team, where he was managing. So why don't you talk a little bit about the practical challenges and the experience that you had running the PMO and how you dealt with, because being an infrastructure area, not all of them are PMP certified, I'm assuming. What was the people investment like?
Well, so it's interesting. You look at a company like Microsoft and you think, oh, there's lots of great PMs there. That's how they built their business. Well, we found that most of the PMs in our organization were people that just got put in that role. Well, you're good at that. You're going to now be the PM. So the methodologies, the infrastructure, all that stuff is all good and it needs to happen, but most of those people that come in don't even know it's there. So probably our biggest challenge was just the maturity of the PMs, the ability to even know what our processes were. So that was probably our biggest hurdle to go in. And we, Ram said, we have a discipline committee for IT, for the PM discipline, and I'm a part of that. And we've helped develop training. We've done online training, and we encourage people to go to MPUG and all the different tools that are out there. And I think it's been very successful. We've been able to push that maturity level up.
Is there any specific area? You talked about methodology. Was that the primary focus area? Or when you introduced Project 2010, did you had any specialized training for the end users on the tool set?
Yeah, the tool set. You think that, again, going back to the company that develops the tool, oh, you guys know how to use that. Well, no, we don't know how to use the tool. It's no one understands the scheduling algorithms or anything better than most PMs, right? So it was probably the biggest challenge, was getting people to understand how to use Project as a tool. Excel and Word, those are pretty intuitive, but Project itself is pretty challenging. So we did a couple week-long sessions, had trainers come in, help coach people through some of the initial stuff, and we continue to do brown bags and continue to, you know, move the bar up a little bit.
Again, from the audience, are there any techniques that you guys have taken in your organization on how you ramp up a new project manager community or even like a team members? I'm pretty sure that like most of you are looking to adapt or already adapting agile practices. How does the project management as a discipline applies to project that follows agile? How are you training your people? What is being the primary mechanism?
I know another problem that we have, and you probably have the same thing, is we hire a lot of vendor PMs that come in. So we are constantly having to retrain those people too.
You got some?
Mm-hmm. Very basics that, you know, every team member gets exposed to. At some point, we have sponsor training that teaches. It's not just for sponsors. It's also for project managers and other people who need to support a sponsor as well as to what their responsibilities are. And then we actually do our own PMI certification boot camp internally as well. And then we follow the, I don't know if you're familiar with Harold Curry, but we follow
one of the things, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I've helped different companies, but I would just say what I think works best is when you integrate the tool training with the process training, so it's in context, and you have the trainer who may not know anything about the business, but you have the business, the business representative that everyone respects and helps create that, and then go in together with that, follow it on with brown bags and hand-holding and one-on-one mentoring.
One of the things that we found at Microsoft is that our discipline committee that he was talking about, which Rod is part of, Brad is part of, we have two discipline that we have think of within project management. One is your traditional project managers, which is the PM discipline. They are responsible for schedule, they are responsible for statusing, they are responsible for issues and risk management and so on and so forth. And then there is another new discipline which got initiated about 2 years ago, which is called delivery management. They are responsible for a higher level. They are responsible for stakeholder management. They are responsible for resource management and other higher activities. So one of the things that got done from our business side of it is that we built what is called PM Playbook, which is essentially a customized version of whole PMBOK, but in a demystified language so that anybody can understand that. Another one area that we did was that I mentioned about variability. So as part of the analysis work among the community, we found that there are six areas that turned out to be an opportunity area where there is a significant variance. So we said, call them as a magic six. So there was a walking deck that was built and say like, okay, here is where we find a significant variance. How you do a baseline of a project, how you do a statusing of a project, how do you do a management of the risk of the project? These are the areas, or how do you define your project charter? These are the areas where you think like, you know, you week in, make sure that like, these are the areas that we address. That really paid off. So now people don't make those mistakes so much. It is in the different areas. But like on that gave us, again, a focus area to work on and enable us to get some some value. One thing I'm very intrigued, like, you know, Rod and myself were asking ourselves, is the last question. Okay, we're making investment. And especially at Microsoft, all of us can take any number of trainings. We can go to any number of conferences. It's like, oh, there is no limit to it. How do you measure that investment? And we couldn't really come up. Like, no, I mean, I'm sure it costed each of your organization some lot of significant dollar amount for you to send them here in this conference. How do you really, like, you know, say, like, I got this much in return? The only thing I could tell Rod was, like, oh, man, if the project is on time, on budget, it delivered to the business customer expectations, that means we got a good project manager on it. Is it the only person, was the only reason why we managed to get all of it? Probably not, but it's a good enough thing, right? Do you, in your organizations, look to measure these investments? If you do, what is the proxy from your CFO perspective that he looks for? Does he look at how many people with the PMP certified? Do they look at number of trained hours versus number of risk items identified? What, is there any kind of measures that you guys look at? Oh, okay.
So the HR goes into that. So particular areas of the business, including IT, would say, okay, here's the capabilities I need to raise. Another thing we're looking at doing is taking CMMI training package, which has some criteria and best practices, and applying that to making sure there's readiness of roles. And that applies now to HR as they look at the workforce they're going to need 3, 6, 9, 12 months from now, and what you have to do to make sure you're ready.
Okay, so it's more used as a strategic workforce management. So just given you are representing Toyota, like let's say like Toyota wants to come up with a new like you know, hybrid vehicle or something of the nature, and they're going to build a plant or something, do you try to use some of the forward-looking data set to say like, oh, hey, I'm going to require 150 project managers, whereas I don't necessarily have the capacity in my organizations for these 150 managers, so I need to retrain the existing workforce. Is that the kind of info that you guys do? Okay. Got it.
Follow up to that, where is that capability measurement coming from? How do you know? Are you looking at the new projects coming up?
Well, you know, we're in the financial services business, so it's it starts from the top down and what our overall strategic goals are. Someone's come from headquarters, down to the U.S., others we generate just the overall. So those go into the strategic plan. And so it's just like the trick of taking the strategic plan and having majors for those and tying it into the employee capabilities. That's probably the only you know, part that I think would be better than that.
Okay. All right. So the next piece of the capability maturity, we talked about process, we talked about people. The next important thing is intelligence or information. I'm pretty sure every organization has got some key metrics that they use to monitor the progress that they're making in an individual project or a collection of a project. The most common stuff that we have is that besides the fact that the standard metrics like did you deliver the projects on time, how many like you know, risks items that are past due, those kind of metrics that we look at, we also look at what we call compliance data. The compliance data is essentially like, you know, how many folks are really following the processes and how much of that information is available in a centralized repository. So what is interesting to note is that this is just a one sample data that we did. So the column one that you're seeing is like 77%. There you go. If you look at like what has been your compliance rate all of Microsoft IT, it's only 77%. So it's like what, C or D, whatever the like grade is. We still have a long way to go. That's really like one of the measures that like the leadership looks at almost on a weekly basis and like what is contributing to this? How do we change the maturity? It's not that we need to be 100%. That's never the goal. But we wanted to get to as close as possible to 100%. In certain occasions, 100% doesn't mean much because we don't want to get to a culture where people are just doing it for the purpose of bureaucracy or for the purpose of, oh, it's a checklist activity. We don't want that behavior either. But this is one of the metrics that we look at on it. The second one, from a maturity standpoint, if your CIO, if your leadership team isn't talking the common language that we talked about earlier, if he's not asking for what's your schedule variance, what is the number of risk items due, what is your scope, what is your value realization, what are your risk factors, and so on and so forth, we will never able to use a common framework for advancing project management. So we do have a dashboard, like many of you guys do, and that dashboard is very often used in our MBRs and QBRs in determining the conversation. Of course, we being a large organization, it's not possible for us to have a conversation on every one of the projects. So typically the conversation would be, like our CIO will look at it and say like, okay, what is going on with the DAX phase one? Why is the scope and schedule is so red, causing a contribution to overall, like on the status is being red? And it seems like you've been trending like this for the last 2 months. What's going on? What kind of help do you need? And then the conversation zones in on that particular issue or a particular line item. Right. So we have a culture, it's kind of like along called don't do watermelon.
That's what I was just going to say. We call them watermelon projects.
Watermelon projects are, it's green outside, it's extremely red inside. So all the way from KT, Kevin Turner, who is our operations lead, COO, to the management level, even I push Brad many times. He's like, oh, Brad, you're not green. Your project, we haven't got this particular issue resolution from the product group. Go and say it is yellow or red. There is a lot of conscious effort to push them in. But if you say you are other than green, from a methodology standpoint, you have to start thinking about what we call CAB at minimum. What is the cause for your status being not green? What action are you going to take so that you can get back to green? And by when will you get that action completed? So this is the basic stuff that we try to educate our project managers. So when you say, I'm having a red, there will be a good explanation that it has at least these three components. Shameless plug. You had some other point?
Yeah, Bob, I had a question. What is the composition of the audience or of the MBR, QBR? What is the engagement model, DMO standpoint, the accountability, responsibility, how does it play out?
So the QBRs are typically with the corporate VP or the area VPs with it. The delivery manager, who is responsible for all up, they have to present their program status as part of the portfolio review. And it does have mostly all the decision makers across the discipline. It's the business sitting there, your IT leaders, your developers, engineers, service engineer, all of these guys sitting and sharing the status as to like, no, why is it? It's not just one aspect of it. Oh, yeah, yeah, of course. And there are a lot of action item comes out. So they will say, like, no, oh, we had some service outage. So then, like, no, we say, like, oh, why was there service outage on this particular version of it? Then, like, no, immediately an action item is taken, and, like, oh, there is a follow-up through as well.
And the MBRs?
MBRs are monthly business reviews, and that is happens most likely at a portfolio level. And it is oftentimes is in a smaller scale. You don't, like, no, bring a lot of people, but it is frequently happens as well in a lot of big parts. It is typically with the sponsors. It is not with your peers necessarily.
So we also have those just in our PMO, right? Every other week we have a project meeting. We bring those dashboards to that project meeting and we talk through those so that we can surface any of the same issues earlier. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
PMO,
yep, correct.
Right. Our previous CAO has had a habit. Like, you know, he was the one who was pushing really hard about the watermelon. And he noticed that, like, you know, a lot of people keep putting yellow or red, because they thought that, like, if they're yellow, they will not get picked, right? Because there are so many yellows, so, like, oh, I'm not going to get picked kind of stuff. So in that case, what he do is, like, he will also even pick the green one. Hey, you're saying green one, but I don't remember hearing any success stories from you. What did you deliver for the business? Why are you green? So that threw people off completely off the ground. It's like, oh, wait a minute, I thought I'm not going to get questioned. So now you're asking me, so he does bring in the value delivery aspect as well in the QBRs. That did happen as well quite a few times.
So one important thing, too, is to have all those definitions for the indicators you're measuring, to have them very well defined, because then
right.
it helps.
One of our functional leaders corrected that always green behavior
saying,
if we have all green projects, maybe we don't need project managers.
That's right.
So we started seeing some more color in our discussion.
Right, that's right. All right, in the spirit of time, like, you know, maybe one question I wanted to ask you guys is that, are there any leading indicators that you guys find in your project management? Because what I showed you, like, you know, whether it is a status as part of the CAO top programs or the compliance, is sort of after the fact.
They're all trailing indicators.
Are all trailing indicators. In your organizations, do you have any leading indicators that talk about the value the project management community is bringing to the organization? Because we would love to learn about this. Like, no, we wanted to see what should be the one that we should be thinking about. Currently, the stuff that we have in our mind, again, like, we don't know yet how it will get measured and it will be reported. We have the BCAs, business case analysis, right? Like, no, you wanted to say, like, oh, here is the business case analysis. And we are thinking that, like, maybe that business case analysis needs to tie it to the milestones kind of stuff. So maybe that way we can say, like, no, that you did or not. But I'm not still sure whether that is still considered as a trailing or a leading, because I'm not comfortable yet. But, like, that's one area where we are thinking about. If you guys have anything, like, oh, please do share it. Like, no, it'll be really good to learn from you guys. What is your organization thinking about in that area?
Initially, you can tell within 1 second how the organization is actually managing its vibration.
And we have a section in our dashboard that actually says how many risks for each project are there, right? If it's zero, it's an indicator and it's red.
Right, right.
And from a project management quality, so it's not, I don't know if you want to call that a matrix, for me it's more of a quality indicator. It's really looking at the frequency of uptake of some of the key documents, the key deliverables of project management. How often do you update your plan, how often do you update your key risk log, issues log? Is that driven just because you have a review in a day or a stage gate that you have to go through? Is that really something you're using? Because it's the whole
Yeah.
I mean, if you really want to know, I think subjectively you want to make sure they're engaged and they've adopted it as their own.
Uh-huh.
And a good test is the people that typically prompt them for those things, if they quit, will they show up? And then the real hard question is, will anyone care or notice? You really want to know if you've really adopted it.
Right. Okay. All right. Now we are going to get to the probably what you were expecting to be the talk, which is the technology portion of it. So I want to start with a little bit of an IT ecosystem. I am sharing with you a partial blueprint of the technology components that make up the IT ecosystem within Microsoft IT that is in support of our delivery business process. It starts at the top, ITLC. Of course, everybody within IT is a consumer of the ITLC content. They are in the form of a guidance, templates, samples, and so on and so forth. Then you have the business modeling and a little bit of a business requirement that is done using W5. It's a tool from Business Genetics. We have an in-house, it's been now nearly 8 years or so, a tool that is built on ASP.NET called SmartDash. We have a project server and a project online. The reason why I say project server and online is that there is still a small portion of projects are being managed and maintained in the project server 2013 instance, whereas others are trying to use a project online version of it. Then we, being a Microsoft, we also get to use a few other Microsoft products. The two most notable products are Visual Studio, where we have a lot of task management and work item management happens, and then what we call as a DFM, a Dynamics for Financial Management, which is Dynamics AX component, where the quotation, the resourcing, time reporting, or interestingly happens. So for us, like, you know, trying to bring even this three part of the universe, namely the project server online and the Visual Studio and Dynamics, is fairly an interesting integrational challenge, because you have to define where does the project gets defined first, how does it get carried over in the other part of the ecosystem. What are the mapping? What kind of an integration do we need to have? Those are all very interesting architectural problems that we deal with even now. Because it's not a, especially as VSTF is maturing as an ALM product, application lifecycle management product. They are bringing in product backlog, they are doing an estimation standpoint, and they have a very good integration with a DevOps world, how the product can be deployed. So there is a tendency for the developers to live and breathe in Visual Studio. The finance guys who wants to do a cost-based accounting, they want to live in the Dynamics world of the world. How is the $1.7 billion get spent across the various business units that we have? And then the project manager in between, who's trying to do a risk and issues management across various stuff. So that's a kind of an ecosystem that we have. I'm pretty sure this is not very different from you guys. So just show off your hands. How many of you use more than one tool for your project management? So at least 50% of you guys use more than one tool for project management. What is the popular tools do you guys use besides it being a homegrown? I mean, do you use more than one package software for your project management? Or is it always in-house plus, of course, Office is always there, Excel and other stuff. It's packaged. Okay.
It's all identified
coming.
And in some cases, we'll use Rally for requirements and such, and we use HTTP quality center for the requirements.
I see. Okay. All right. So now let's talk a little bit about Project Online and what kind of architectural decisions that we went through for Project Online. As I said, we have started using Project Online now probably 14, 18 months?
Probably about 18 months, yeah.
18 months or so. We were one of the early customers of Project Online. And we went through the TAP and also prior to TAP, there was an instance that we had access to and so on and so forth. The first and foremost was, as you saw in our ecosystem, the foremost question that happens was functionality. How do we segment what piece of functionality are we going to attack? Are we trying to consolidate all this functionality into one system and have them as one system rule all of project management functionality? Or do we consciously make a decision saying, we are going to have a distributed functionality. If you want to do issues and risk management, this is a tool to use. If you wanted to do a work item management, this is the tool to use. If you want to do a project accounting and project costing, you ought to use this tool. It's a kind of conscious choice. That was one significant architectural decision that we need to do. The other one was, like any other organization, we are budget constrained. So we can't do a big bang theory. So in that case, what is that portion that we can do? What is it we want to do near term versus a long term? That influences in what area of project management do we focus on. That was a big decision that we had to make. Infrastructure, as you all probably know, Project Online is nothing more than a SharePoint-based application. If you have a SharePoint form, you already have a project web access on it. You can just go and turn on the project web access mechanism in your environment. You don't need anything extraordinary. Within Microsoft, any one of us can go and create a SharePoint instance, which means I can technically convert that SharePoint instance to be my project management environment. What happens with that? I now have a fragmented infrastructure. I no longer have a centralized repository where I have all the schedule information, where I have all the resource information, and so on and so forth. That was a biggest decision as well. Do we encourage a utility mentality, or do we get into a managed functions mentality? If there is going to be, we start from somewhere and we move into another one, what is that path looks like? That was another one. The next item in the functionality or the infrastructure pair was that we are fairly a complex organization. Sometimes I find myself lost in the maze as to who is responsible for what aspect of the IT. So we have to think about do we take the approach of a federated model wherein we can use the discipline leads, we can use like people like Brad and myself to offer a more of a managed service? Or do we say that like, no, hey, here is a cookie. Here is the recipe for how to make the cookie. You go and make it for your part of the business. Even though you're part of an IT, it's your responsibility to now go and make it and maintain it. That was another decision that we need to make, federated versus centralized. And then the third dimension was that servicing. Just because software is available as a service, you still have a lot of unanswered questions. Who provides the coverage of the service? If I am a project manager, I don't know how it works in Project Online, who do I go and ask that question? Or if I find myself that in my Project Online, the Active Directory server, the user account is not replicated, who do I go and raise it to? What is the expected service level should be? These are all questions that we needed to deal with as part of the adapting Project Online. The final one is that as we think about a service or a solution, because project management is now being available in the form of a service, what should be the governance model for it? What kind of a responsibility should the corporate team should take care of versus the individual BPUs, business process units, should take care of versus the individual PMOs? Because if I'm on a, let's say, like a $20 million strategic initiative, I have probably freedom to do certain things on my own. Because I might say, like, no, hey, you know what? This is what my MBR is going to look like. Where is that comes in? And the most important point is that, like, no, okay, if you're trying to really get to a common repository, a common language, what effort do we need to do organizationally so that the data is on time, available for us to do a processing of it? These were the things that we had to go through quite a lot. And I'm pretty sure in the spirit of time, I'm going to skip some of these questions here, but I'm pretty sure you guys have dealt with a similar kind of a concerns or questions within your organization. So I'm going to dive into one or two just to give you a flavor of what has been our thought process, what has been our journey like. And if you're already using, I think I heard a couple of you are already using Project Online. I would love to hear what is your experiences on Project Online. So that way, even for those of you who are looking to move to either a hosted 2013 or even a 2013, it'll be very valuable lessons for you. Functional usage, in our case, we decided to start with a schedule management and status reporting, because that's one variability that we wanted to eliminate within the organization. So we said, like, we really need to have everybody being able to publish the project into the central repository so that we can get that. Our longer-term focus is obviously integrated with both upstream and a downstream. When I say upstream and a downstream, I'm talking about strategic enterprise architecture. For those of you who had a chance to attend, a Donna session on Gartner's view of PPM, we strongly believe in IT portfolio management. In the IT portfolio management, the strategies get cascaded into a set of services, and that set of services gets rendered through the organization, through the PPDI that we talk about. In that case, how does it all cascade? We have a separate system called Planning IT. How does it tie into Planning IT? Once that is done, once you have identified a project that you're going to prioritize and fund it, the financial details are going to sit in our Dynamics AX solutions. So how is the interaction between Project Server or Project Online with the Dynamics AX? That's one part of it. And then the Visual Studio for your task or work item management. These are the downstream systems. Because as many of you know, the integration between Visual Studio and a Project Online is through the project professional. So which means your project manager has to facilitate the integration. There is no auto magic that exists for these things. So those are the things that we had looked at. Another thing that we had was that federated infrastructure. One of the things that we early on agreed is that we have multiple business unit, a corporate function, shared service, user experience, Microsoft product and services, sales and marketing, and enterprise commerce IT. So we had Anton, who is from Pro, they helped us build a utility that allowed us to synchronize the configuration from our sandbox environment into our federated instances. So that way we had an architectural governance on how these instances are being managed. However, the individual instances are managed by people like Rod Bray. So they could decide what they wanted to do, who they wanted to do a provisioning of, who they should be considered as a project manager versus executives and so on and so forth. But the basic configuration, the enterprise fields, the views, the templates, all other stuff, it was centrally managed through the sandbox effort. So it's a one per BPU, multiple instances. It's a coordinated configuration and a propagation through the tool that Anton built for us, which I think is now a product, right? Yeah, it's a product now. All right, so another interesting thing was that even though we are Microsoft, we had a significant challenges. That's probably an understatement on how do we provide the end user services. And we did an analysis and I kind of the project, I think Brad, you're finishing up in about a week or two.
The service one, yeah.
Yeah. So we literally went through all the tickets that get generated, all the email that went through, all the IM sessions that is happening on what does it mean for the end user to get the level of service. And the request user stories were interesting, all over the map. So you get support call to say like, oh, hey, I'm trying to save. It's spinning the wheel, nothing happens. I entered my resource information. I can't find my resource information anymore. I don't know how to get started, like, no, because they don't even know what the project center interface is and so on and so forth. It's all over the map that was existing. So what we did is that we identified what kind of features are the requests, if you will, that our end users are trying to get. And that led to saying, like, no, you know what? These are the services that we really need to provide from an administrative perspective. Some services are going to be the responsibility of the PMO office. Some services are the responsibility of the corporate functions IT that is providing the services to the rest of the IT. And some functions are going to be the responsibility of the tenant administrator who is having the account with Microsoft as a service provider. And some of it is really the product group responsibilities that we trying to define all those pieces. This is how we are looking at. So you guys are very familiar with the product group. Of course, if you are buying a service, you get your commercial support, which is the PSS or Premier. That's this wing. Then the MSIT picture starts. This organization is all about plumbing. They are responsible for provisioning. They are responsible for patch management, if it is applicable. And they are responsible for business continuity management, those kind of pieces. Then we have our help desk, which is our regular. It's not just for project, any product. You can just pick the line and you can call them up and say, like, no, I have a problem with this particular product, and they will provide a service support for it. And then it gets into the individuals, users. Obviously, there are a lot of aspects that we are looking at currently as part of our proposal, as part of our service definition. This is the service definition. So what you saw in this slide were all the services that we are looking at, a broad set of services. And how is the service is going to be rendered through this model? Because we don't believe that, like, even though we get charged for the consumption of Microsoft Online, there is still a refinement that we need to do so that we have a clarity on who is responsible for what aspect of the service. Because for us, it was a painful process that really, like, no, again, played very significantly into whether we have all the users adapting a project management solution or not. So that's the piece that we have. Finally, a couple of outputs. Of course, this is like on dashboard. I'm not going to spend too much time on where we are in our journey. We had some app got developed. Again, this app is now almost a year old. We built a SharePoint web app because we were very tech-centric when it comes to statusing. And online didn't have a good mechanism for OData data retrieval. So Rod Bray had like a really a tough time with the OData, and we worked with Mike and others in the product group. Anton came to a rescue, and he built a SharePoint web app, which also another interesting thing is that, like, we had to learn the process of how do you get that web app deployed, because it needs to be in your SharePoint app catalog for it to be added to your system. And we had a separate team that was responsible for all of SharePoint apps. So we had to go through their clearance process and how it works. It was an interesting journey for us on all this stuff. Yeah. And then the last point, like, you know, this is a little bit of a realism I also wanted to share, is that we do some of the risk management. Again, like, our goal is maturing the capability. When you look at risk management as a capability, we made a conscious decision that tool will not be a barrier for our organizations to follow the processes. Today, the issues in risk management, we have a common schema, but that common schema is available in essentially in three distinct flavors. You can do it in Project Server or Project Online, essentially, or you can do it in Visual Studio as a work item type, or you can do it in SharePoint. So that allows the individual team to manage their own, like, issues and risks the way they see it fit, but we have a way of extracting the data and pulling it to the central location. So I just want to, like, say, like, it's not just all Microsoft Project. We also have an ability to use it across. So just to wrap it up, hopefully it is super clear. In order to advance the capability, you really need to take a look at least we have taken a look at, from a capability standpoint, people, process, information, and technology. Having some early adapters, people like Rod Bray and his organization, helped us understand and iron out the issues that we see in an enterprise adoption. Not only iron out, but also identify some value drivers that help us sell a little bit better within the organization. And the other thing which we are realizing now is that, like, now look, integration is super critical, but it's going to take time and energy. We can't see the magic happen right away. The reason being, it's not that software cannot do the magic. The reality is that it is the resource, it is the, like, you know, time and effort that becomes a priority, and it gets kind of going in. That has been our lessons when it comes to advancing the maturity. Any questions, any thoughts?
So as a point, we were talking yesterday with the product group last night at one of the functions, and we have the most active and largest set of projects in any of the online instances. So we're pounding that thing, hoping to find any problems before they come out to you guys. So.
Are you happy with it?
Am I happy with it? That's a loaded question. So
I
managed a 2010 instance, and we built this great reporting infrastructure. It was SSRS reports. It was beautiful. So I also was the guy responsible for all the patching, the CUs, all of the work behind the scenes. So it's a trade-off for me. I love not having to do that. I love being able to go manage the PMO and do more process work. I don't miss the patching and worrying about the servers being up and down. But I totally miss the reporting capabilities. And I know we're getting there. I know the stuff Mike's been putting out there is getting us a long way, but it's still just not quite there yet. I pound on him and Mark Boyer on a regular basis. Where are we?
Yeah. You had some. Yeah.
We're trying. We're helping it best we can.
Can you, what is the volume of projects? You said you guys are pushing hard. How many projects have you run through there, and are they high complexity type projects?
Yeah, some of them are really complex, thousands of lines long. Probably the average length of most of our projects are probably in the 300 to 500 task range. They're anywhere from 3 months to a year in length. Probably the number of resources on each of those projects is somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 50. And we have, overall, within the two instances that I manage, we probably have about 2,500 projects running right now.
From your model, then, that you don't share resources then across the different groups?
No, we made some conscious efforts around that, right? So we do some reporting on resources, but what we looked at is where did those reports need to go up, right? So, you know, up into the higher level of IT, you don't really care about the resourcing. It's really per unit that you're worried about that. So if I bring someone in from another team, I just put them in as a generic resource. Just I put a name in there, and we manage it that way. If they need some other reporting or access or some different things, then we'll bring them into our resource pool. I actually created a directory, a directory group that I can add out of, you know, non-group people to.
Are you doing resource
management? We are trying. We're starting to get there. That's kind of the next step for us.
Right.
We've got all of our projects into the tool. We're, you know, managing the projects that way, and we're just starting to dabble in the resource management. But we're, you know.
Yeah, so
it's difficult.
When we talk about resource management, or at least like three dimensions that we are dealing with, right? One dimension is the basic utilization and availability. Like, you know, how do you record your operational tasks, and how do you do all this stuff? And the second aspect of it is that, like, you know, skills management. Like, you know, how do you, because we even though we are micro... Right. So that's the second dimension. The third dimension is that, like, where he was going in with, like, that's what I was probing you in Toyota, is like, you know, one of the things that we are looking to do is that, like, you know, we really wanted to look at our resource capacity and resource requirements in a long-term horizon. What kind of a skill set do we need organizationally 2 years from now or 18 months from now kind of stuff? For instance, like a data scientist, how do you identify that you need data scientists in the organization, and you need to have at least 10 of them to be able to successfully execute projects like Nokia integration and so on and so forth. That's the data mining that is necessary. Again, like, no, I don't think one solution, because we haven't even went through the business process portion yet. So we've got to go through that, understand what levers that we need in order to mine that kind of a data before we can say, like, no, that's the dimension. And the added complexity that we have, because we have Dynamics AX, where the time reporting is happening, and because we have Visual Studio, where the task assignments are happening, and we have a project, we have some integration things to think about. Like, now, where does the initial assignments happen? How does it get propagated from one system to another system? Otherwise, we are going to be doing a double bookkeeping. That's another interesting challenge that we have. No, so because we operate worldwide, like, you know, we, first of all, like, you know, contractors are typically, like, you know, there are two types of contractors. There is what they call contingent staff, which are reported on a weekly basis, which is nowadays is almost null. And then we have what they call, like, you know, mostly deliverable-based contractors. The deliverable-based, we don't call them as a contractor, we call them as a vendor or suppliers. And those people are based on the PO and based on the deliverable that we are committed to. They don't report the time. They report only the deliverable that they make. And also, even within IT, within the FTE, not all the countries you can do time reporting. Like, you know, Germany is a good example. You can't just go and ask for time and that. So from that standpoint, all the consulting, like, you know, complexities exist for us as well. If there aren't any more questions, thank you all very much for joining. I hope you got a good session.